Rob. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, it is Wednesday, so let's talk to the Daily Line. Of course, a publication that covers all things city, county, and state here in the state of Illinois. A.D. Quigg and Ray Hodge join us tonight. A.D. covers City Hall here and, of course, Cook County, and Ray down in Springfield. Thanks for joining us. Good to see you, A.D. And also, I wanted to introduce Ray. Ray, come on in. You there?
Hey, how's it going?
There you go. I got everybody. Good, good. Let's start with you, Ray. Today was a day in which Illinois did some work that was supposed to be done maybe 30 years ago. The Equal Rights Amendment.
Yeah, they might have been running a little bit behind there. You know, it might have been just a little bit delayed. Only about 36 years or
36
so.
Years.
However, the Senate did pass us a bill here, the Equal Rights Amendment, long overdue by a lot of the proponents that they're saying. The opponents, of course, say that this is not exactly something that needs to be done. But nevertheless, the Senate did clear it 42-12.
And so this is interesting because Senator Staines was talking about this concept of protecting the rights of Illinois residents just in case something at the federal level goes awry. And this is also what was at the heart of the abortion bill that was done before. This seems to be a very popular way to govern at this time in the state of Illinois.
Well, and you know, it's funny that you should say that because it's more federal than we normally see here. Normally, you know, with Illinois, there tends to be quite a bit of groundbreaking in terms of how the legislation works, and that's regardless of what topic it is. It tends to lead quite a bit. But in this case, you know, we've got 35 other, you know, states which have, you know, attempted to ratify this over the years, and this one has been in particular far delayed. But yeah, you're right. It cuts right to the quick of a specific piece of language that, you know, as short as this amendment is, all it really says is just that you can't discriminate on the basis of sex. So, I mean, in that vein, the proponents would argue, hey, you know, if there is a measure out there that would be overturned by it, then perhaps it should be. I don't know. You know, so that's the kind of the core of it, the root of it that they're going after.
And Illinois residents and voters and people who are listening to this program right now and seeing that news would probably scratch their head and not remember specifically that the state failed to pass or have a state version of the Equal Rights Amendment back 36 years ago. So they might be scratching their head wondering why this is happening today.
Well, you know, it's funny, too. One of the things that if you start to look into the research, it seems like Illinois, given its legislative history in the last 20 years or so, or even over the last 40 years, it's been pretty quick to adopt protections that are, you know, legally focused on discriminated parties in terms of just state house mechanisms. But it's actually interesting that Illinois, you know, for many years ago, when the first protections for women started to be legislated federally and on a state level, it was quite a leader as far back as 1912, even. I mean, not to take everybody on a history lesson here, but there you have it. You know, this is a sort of a return to a trend, historically speaking, for the state. And unfortunately, you know, there are so many other issues that have been brought up that had to be brought up to a head in order to start asking these core questions, things about sexual harassment, payouts, equal wage parity, workplace protections for women. I think all these are starting to really coalesce. It could be, as the ERA proponents say, this is one way to sort of clear them all.
Yeah. One thing that's not being talked about today, but it's on everybody's mind, is the override, the veto override of the gun licensing bill. This was a bill that right after, I think it was right after Parkland, Florida, that was put on to put a little bit more restriction on gun owners through gun dealers and essentially being able to training to recognize straw ownerships or straw dealers that might be using illegal guns, some other things as well. This was vetoed by the governor right before the primary. People said it was political for him to appeal to a base of his party. But where are we? Because the seems that the Senate and the House leadership wants to override the veto, but they may not have the votes.
Well, I tell you, you know, today was a very critical turning point in this gun debate issue. The bill that we're talking about here, it's Senator Don Harmon. He's a Democrat out of Oak Park. And he's actually been working this gun dealer licensing bill for something like 10 years, right? So this isn't just something that sparked hastily after the Parkland shootings, but rather now, because of those unfortunate tragedies, there's a great deal of support and momentum that this bill has never seen. But this bill has been worked to find compromises with gun owners, regionally, downstate, associations, lobbying. Everybody's had a hand in being able to really put their mark on this thing and work together on something here. I mean, the hearings have been extensive. But today, one of the most crucial things, just as you're saying, with the Republican sort of opposition to that, a poll came out today that showed overwhelming support for this gun dealer licensing bill. I mean, we're talking about 71% are in favor, 23% are against.
And these are Illinois residents we're talking about.
Democrat poll or some Republican poll, right? These are both,
right.
Both of these parties.
Yeah, and have you talked to, do lawmakers seem, some that might have been, you know, sort of cemented in their opposition or in their, you know, whether or not they're for it, seeing this poll, these poll numbers and maybe changing their, to where they're at?
I tell you what, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, this being a deadline week in the State House, it's kind of like when the circus comes to town, right? All the lights kick on. I counted up the number of bills here, and just in this one week, the number of House bills was over 700 bills, right?
Wow.
So everything is sort of crazy in a whirlwind, and everyone's moving as fast as they can. So when this poll dropped today, however, the conversation, that's when it really started to take a change in tone. When we saw that veto, it was right before the primary, right? And a lot of people, you know, critics perhaps of the governor or even some supporters of him said, this is him throwing a bone to his base. You know, he wants to appear strong and pro-NRA. Well, some of the key places where the governor and where many GOP leaders are looking right now for fall are in those sort of western suburban districts. Those tend to be a little less pro-gun, but still very strongly GOP. Interestingly enough, among this poll, that exact area favored gun control, and in fact favored this particular gun licensing bill at almost 75%. So those lawmakers who have been kind of on the fence about it, if they haven't started talking to their, you know, their folks back home about this bill again, then today's probably going to be the day that those start, because finding out that 75% of a key swing voting block for Republicans are favoring a piece of legislation, that's a conversation starter.
Ray Hodge, she covers Springfield politics for the Daily Line, dailyline.net, joins us Wednesdays. A.D. Quigg is also here. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, A.D. will join us. We'll talk about some stuff that's happening and whether or not we're going to see some big leaders in city council skip the re-election process, just decide that they're done, their careers are over, they had a good run.
They want to spend more time with their families.
They want to spend more time with their families. Have that conversation coming up here on The Download. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. So Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're talking with A.D. Quigg and Ray Hodge. We now turn to A.D. Quigg from The Daily Line to talk about some storylines in Chicago politics. Alderman, of course, the municipal election coming up here in February, the primary. And this is interesting because a lot of aldermen at this juncture right about now are going to start making decisions on whether or not they're going to run for re-election.
Right.
So you're starting to see some aldermen say, it was a good run, but I'm out.
Yeah. So we know that two aren't running already. That's Amaya Pawar, who ran for governor. He term limited himself as alderman, and there's already like seven people running for his seat up on the north side in Ravenswood. Alderman Willie Cochran, who was indicted on federal bribery charges, also announced that he will not be running. He didn't say it was because of the indictment. I think he said it was because he collapsed on the floor of city council.
Health reasons.
Yes. Was unconscious on the floor of city council. There's already two people running there, and I would expect that one to get
pretty
crowded.
That's so Chicago, though. That's so Chicago to be like, yes, I was unconscious on the floor, but I'm also got federal indictments for bribery. But you know what? It's too much for me.
It's too much. I mean, it's stressful to be indicted.
Yeah.
So that's two seats. On Monday, Alderman Mike Selesky from the 23rd Ward, which is on the southwest side, announced he is retiring. He said there was no funny business, no big conspiracy to slate some Mike Madigan candidate. He just said, I need to spend time with my wife. She's going through her fourth surgery. My wife takes care of my mother, who is still alive. I just want to hang out with my family, so I'm out. That means the mayor will get to appoint his successor. Usually he'll put together a panel of four people, and those four people will open up applications, and everyone will apply, and then we'll get a pre-slated candidate kind of in the spot.
Well, I mean, as you just said, no funny business, but why not just not run for re-election?
He said that he didn't want to pretend like he was running. He just said, I want to get out, which allows other people to organize. And the way he put it was, whoever the mayor appoints, they'll have a certain amount of time to prove if they're up for the task. Which is, I mean, it's just a classic Chicago thing to announce your retirement, retire a month later, and then let someone be in office for a few months so people know their name and they can take care of your garbage for a while. And then you're like, they do an okay job, they can stay.
That's so true. Like, anyway. Okay, so there is going to be some competition. What about some of the big names, like Alderman Ed Burke? There was, we talked about this right after the primary election where his brother Dan Burke was beat for his state rep seat. And the organization that's really run by Chewy Garcia said, we're kind of looking at Alderman Ed Burke as well, saying, you know what, you might want to say it's been a great career because we're gunning for you. So has there been any talk about whether or not Alderman Ed Burke will hang him up?
There's been talk. He has never struck me as a guy who goes down without a fight, and he's got a ton of money. So I wouldn't be surprised if he would duke it out. He's held power in that ward for 50 years, which is hard to topple.
That is not a round number. You didn't just estimate. That's 50 years.
he's been alderman for since he was 26 years old. So familiar name, tons of money. He takes care of ward services like you want your alderman to do. You've got your street plowed and your potholes filled and stuff like that. What I'm curious about is whether Chewy Garcia and Our Revolution, Clem Balanoff, just go after Burke, or if they try to go after a lot of other old regular Democrats on the Southwest side where their power is most concentrated. So Zaleski's on that side of town, Marty Quinn's on that side of town. I'll be excited to see if they go after multiple candidates or if they just go, Ed Burke, we're getting him out so we can have someone new in finance committee.
Because it's not that often, and we saw this before, that the teachers union in the last election, they slated a couple of candidates to take on some of the entrenched aldermen and city council. And we've seen a progressive movement the last election through. We saw some new faces, some new voices that came into council. Do we expect the same from Labor? Do you expect that they're going to mount campaigns against some of the entrenched Democrat aldermen in Chicago?
Definitely. And we also have, there's Cook County Democratic Party leadership elections next week. And we have candidates, including Tony Preckwinkle, who have said we cannot ignore progressive movements anymore, and we need to bring in Labor as well, because both delivered big time in the 2018 elections, and we expect them to be able to deliver again. And they have the kind of ground game that old patronage ward organizations don't have anymore. So.
Interesting. That's next week. That's a big one. That's Joe Berrios versus Tony Preckwinkle.
No. Well, Joe Berrios has not announced that he is not running, but I would be surprised if he ran again. Tony Preckwinkle came out early and said, I'm running. We're going to bring in progressive groups. We're going to bring in Labor. We're going to bring in people of color.
So does she have any challenge for that slot?
So there have been names floating around. Paul Rosenfeld, who is 47th Ward Democratic Committeeman, who super duper increased voter participation in that ward, has also come out with a plan and said, we need to bring in progressive groups, we need to bring in Labor. I went from the 47th ward went from the 29th ranked for voter turnout to the second in the time that I've been there. So I'm good at getting out the vote, and the way I did that was by organizing around issues. I'm not sure how good of a chance he has. Tony Preckwinkle was making calls very early, and she had a very decisive win for Cook County Board President. But at the very least, I think no matter what, we're going to see more progressives, more labor groups involved.
I would love to read that story, the book written about how everyone was calling for the end of Tony Preckwinkle after the soda tax, and there's no way she's going to win. And not only does she just wipe the floor with former Alderman Bob Fioretti, she's now poised to take over the chair of the Democratic Party in Cook County, which is a huge position, especially, of course, in state politics as well.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how decisive that win is, like if she goes in and just sweeps it, or if she has to make some major concessions to other people that are running. Louis Arroyo Sr., the state rep, is also in the running. Alderman Anthony Beal is interested. There are a bunch of people calling her, I'm sure, saying, put me on the executive committee, which I'm not sure how much power you get, but it's nice to be listed, and you get to go to all the meetings, and you get some money and some staff.
Yeah. We got about 1 minute left, and we might want to do this in a bigger way next time we talk, but the police reform movement in city council is a head-scratcher. You had a lot of movement with the consent decree that came from the Department of Justice, and also the mayor and everyone standing in front of the podium after the Laquan McDonald video saying, we are going to change. There was this idea that we'd have a civilian oversight board that would actually have teeth it wouldn't be advisory. But then so overnight, there's a little change around. Right. And now what's in front of one of the ideas is that we would have a committee, but it would just be advisory.
Right. So there are four ordinances now pending that would create some kind of civilian oversight for CPD. And this has been kind of simmering for 2.5 years now. So we have two kind of more radical ones. We have CPAC, which would abolish the police board, abolish COPA. We've got the GAPA ordinance, which is kind of a coalition of community groups, which has more teeth and has the backing of quite a few aldermen. And then out of left field, Alderman Ariel Roboyris, who is very close to the mayor, introduced two ordinances the same day as the GAPA ordinance, and they're purely advisory. Now, Roboyris has said that the mayor is not involved at all, which a lot of people don't believe, but I can't imagine that it looks terribly good for the mayor.
And what does the mayor say?
He has said he wants it to be, whatever comes out of this, he wants it to be complementary, not contradictory, which I think means don't abolish any existing oversight bodies that we have. Don't get rid of the police board, don't get rid of COPA, and don't take a ton of power away from Superintendent Eddie Johnson.
Well, I have a soft spot for Roboyris because he threw out the first pitch in our 16-inch softball league one year.
Oh, wow.
So I just want to throw it out as a conflict. I have a conflict in this conversation.
Was it a good pitch?
I don't remember. I just remember he brought the alderman out as a bit. It was good. Adi Quigg, she covers all things city and Cook County. And Ray Hodge, who joined us as well, covers all things Springfield for the Daily Line. You can find out all that at dailyline.net. They join us every Wednesday. Adi, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.